Step into our confessional. Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. From Greatest Hits Radio, Simon Mayo's Confessions.
That's what this is. It's a confessions podcast full of sins and misdemeanours from around the UK, brought to you by your friends at Greatest Hits Radio. Sister Susie is back in the saloon bar with a fan. Would that be right?
Yes.
I can't hear that. It was a bit of a weedy fan.
It's not
well,
working.
I've turned it off while with microphone. I'll turn it back on later.
Anyway, Brother Matt is here.
Yeah.
A very special birthday.
It is special birthday.
Sorry, is it
35? Yep.
Really?
35. Again.
Were we supposed to have bunting in the studio?
Yeah, we were. Yeah, a bit disappointed. Got donuts, so but you can't eat the donuts because you can't eat.
I've been to the dentist, so yeah. I can suck it out of a straw.
Okay, well, I'm not going to do that.
Is there just sort of jam in the middle?
I did get one just with jam in the middle, seeing you had this big rant about donuts having
A donut should have jam in the middle. It doesn't need icing. It just needs sugar.
Well, there you go. Yes.
Jam.
Also, Sister Holly is here.
Hello, hello.
Yeah. We're going to visit the parish notice board and add to the list of shame more confessions not suitable for broadcast. And also, as you might have heard me mention a couple of times, we have a podcast exclusive, which is a confession which I don't think would have fitted very well on the live radio show.
Oh.
I mean, you'll hear exactly, I mean, you'll probably understand when we get there. Mm-hmm. But very, very occasionally, I think it's only happened once before, really, that I had a confession. I thought, okay, I'm not quite sure what to do with that. And that was for long-standing listeners, the one which we ended up reading with Michael Moore Purgo.
It was
a Second World War story.
Yeah.
But anyway, we will get to that at the end of this particular podcast. You'll also hear, of course, all the confessions from this week's show. If you could listen, Monday to Friday, 4 till 7. That's kind of part of the deal, really.
Please.
You'll hear Laura's tale, taking drastic measures to get her daughter off her phone with her confession. Do-wah-do-lang, oh, telephone line, do-wah-do-lang. Steve's rubbing rivalry, The Boys of Summer, although it's written buoys.
The buoys of summer,
But then that doesn't work.
No.
Anyway, it was my mistake. Billy's confession, love lifts us up where we belong. But first, it's Grace's podcast confession, full of shame and embarrassment and a reference to Mr. Happy.
Mm.
Anyway, it's the greatest gift that I possess.
Simon Mayo's confessions. We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Today's confession comes from Grace. Thank you, Grace. I think we've changed all the names correctly. Father Simon, Sister Susie, Sister Holly, and Brother Matthew, I write with a confessions-based confession.
Oh!
Mm-hmm.
Very meta.
This is a first.
First, some background. It is a first. My 12-year-old son, Alfie, not his real name, and I much enjoy listening to confessions on the radio. We listen regularly in term time, Mondays and Tuesdays, on the way home after school. I am a primary school music teacher, and I hasten to get everything tidied away and done in time to be in the car for when it starts. We particularly love the background music, Albinoni's Adagio, and Alfie, who is also a boy chorister, was deeply excited when his choir sang a choral version of it. Sometimes, though, our schedules do not permit us to listen, and we miss our confession sessions so much that we return to the confessions podcast. We also listen to the podcast to enliven other journeys in the car from time to time. One such time was on the way to a joint birthday party for Alfie's classmate, Sam, and Sam's 15-year-old brother. A 15-year-old lad in our village called Ned, not his real name, had been invited to the same party by Sam's elder brother, so I offered to give both Alfie, who's 12, and Ned, who's 15, a lift to the party some 30 minutes away down the motorway. Before we set off to collect Ned, I started the Confessions podcast. Safely parked in my driveway, I navigated my way to the podcast app via my new and unfamiliar hire car's gadget that endeavours to mirror one's phone. Once Confessions was underway and I was safely able to control it, with the touch of a steering wheel button, ensuring my full concentration on the road, of course,
obviously,
we set off. As always, Confessions made us smile. Arriving at Ned's house, we paused the podcast, underwent the necessary chit-chat with Ned's mum, safely installed Ned in the car, and off we went. I knew Ned's younger brother quite well, as he was the same age as Alfie, but this was the first time I'd met Ned, so tried to make polite conversation. Awkward teenage boys are not known for their conversational prowess, and after a few monosyllabic answers to questions, a mildly tense silence ensued. Then I had the genius idea to introduce Ned to confessions. I explained the format and gave a synopsis of what had happened so far in the one that we were currently listening to, and I pressed the play button.
Excellent.
Fantastic.
This is where things took a turn for the worse.
Oh.
Rather than taking up from where I had left off, I'd managed to press something which took me to the podcast I had been listening to before confessions. My husband is a research scientist, and we had previously been listening to a podcast about insulin resistance. So far, so good, except that the particular topic being introduced about 2 seconds after I accidentally turned it on was the effect of insulin resistance on, shall we say, the Mr. Happy, and how it causes erectile dysfunction.
Oh, no.
So we're going along in the car, and I, a primary school teacher, have just put on a podcast that's talking about Mr. Happy and erectile dysfunction in front of my 12-year-old son and an awkward 15-year-old I've only just met. I'm horror struck. But we're also approaching a roundabout, and I'm in an unfamiliar car, and the steering wheel button seemed to do nothing to turn the podcast off. Safety has to come first, so I have to leave the podcast on whilst navigating the roundabout and turning beetroot red, stuttering apologies overly loudly to try and drown out the podcast into a silence so taut I could cut it with a knife. We're through the roundabout, so I try pressing the buttons on the screen, but to no avail. The podcast continues despite my increasingly frantic jabbing at the screen before another roundabout is upon us. And I know we have to go onto the motorway and therefore no escape because you can't stop on a motorway. They're the rules. Mm-hmm. Instead, I take a different exit from the roundabout just so as not to have to go on the motorway while still jabbing the wretched screen and every button on the hire car known to man. By this time, I've found every type of headlamp, windscreen wiper option in my attempt to stop the podcast, but not the off or the volume button. A few seconds later, though it felt like an eternity, I gratefully pulled up at a petrol station and turned the whole car off.
Oh, that's it then.
I didn't need petrol, but it was the only way to save the situation. Having bought or paid for petrol anyway, I got back in the car and endeavoured to apologise for the situation whilst dying of embarrassment. Suffice to say that for the rest of the journey, those teenagers, usually not content to converse at all, and then only in grunts, made effusive and polite conversation about anything just to avoid me putting that podcast back on. When we arrived at the party, I dispatched the boys to their merrymaking, wept with laughter, nearly causing a further embarrassment in the hire car. If you've pushed out a 10-pound, 4-ounce baby, you'll know. unnecessary. And texted Ned's mum begging for forgiveness, which she gave. It only remains, therefore, for me to ask forgiveness from poor Ned and Alfie. I can never ask them for forgiveness, as to do so would bring up the whole situation afresh and force us all to be very un-British and accept that it happened. So I fall on the mercy of you all. Can you please forgive me? Well, it's a confessions podcast, a podcast which started with a confession and ended with another confession from Grace, who needs some forgiveness. I think she's going to get it all round. Sister Holly.
Well, is she going to get it all round? That's the thing. Now, obviously, it started off so well, playing the confessions podcast. Tick, big, big tick there. However, I do feel slightly sorry for Alfie and Ned in all of this. I was an awkward teenager not that long ago, and the thought of being in the car with my parents and that going on, I would have found horrendously awkward and embarrassing and just so upsetting beyond belief. And so just feeling that pain that Alfie and Ned had, I think I'm not going to forgive this one, I'm afraid, Grace.
Wow.
So sorry.
Super
so sorry.
Stern, sick and wrong, Brother Matthew.
I'm going to forgive shock horror. And the reason for that is, when did cars get so complicated with the playing of radio and podcasts and stuff like that? Why, the old day, you could just turn the little dial and it would turn off, and now you've got to disengage your Bluetooth and everything else, and it's such a pain. Also, you managed to get embarrassing teenagers to talk.
Yes.
Because, frankly, monosyllabic teenagers are the worst. So, for that reason, I'm going to forgive Giorgio Moroder.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Giorgio Moroder.
Yeah. It's because, once again, underneath me was being played
we were running out of time. It was the news.
Yeah.
Nice to have Mr. Happy back.
Yeah.
Were you around Susie for Mr. Happy and the Wasp?
I was, yes.
So that was quite
goodness
fun.
Me. That was
Holly
that was
wasn't, were you?
Yeah. No, I wasn't even born for that one.
No, that's true. She takes misses no opportunity to remind us how young she is.
Yeah.
But Mr. Happy and the Wasp was a good one.
Yes, it was a confession from back in the day when somebody had stepped out of the shower and put on a towel, and there was a wasp
on the towel, then transferred itself to the Mr.
To
Happy.
The
Mr.
Happy.
And I think a wife was out with the wife. His wife. Passing wife. Any old wife. Had to flick the wasp off with a towel.
Yeah. Ooh. There must have been an easier way of.
Well, what would you do?
I don't know.
Why couldn't he have done that himself?
Yeah, you'd have.
Well, because I think he was frozen in fear.
Yeah. You'd want to have control of that.
Okay,
really.
So there's a quote. So what would you do?
Well, I'd do it myself because.
Would you?
You don't. It's one of those.
But it might be that you hadn't noticed. It might be that you took the towel away, and then your wife would say, "There's a
well,
it,
yeah."
A
then,
wasp
then,
on
then
your
the
Mr.
first,
Happy.
Then the first thing is inform me of the wasp. I will deal with the wasp. Definitely don't attack me with a towel, flicking it over there.
That's what she did. Though.
Yeah, she did do that, didn't she?
Yes. I think I would.
I would have had words.
I think
it would
have
been words said.
You'd have,
I think
you'd have had
well,
to bash
what,
it. I
would
think.
You rather be flicked by a towel than have a wasp sting. There.
No, I'd rather just be informed of the wasp.
So the wasp was there, but it hadn't stung him. Is that
yes,
right?
Correct?
That's
yes.
right.
So surely,
yes.
if you just sort of like
it was just hanging
danced
there
about a bit.
No,
if you
would very
danced
bad.
About a bit,
it would go.
I think you just need to bash the wasp. Isn't that a saying?
No,
I think
it's definitely
it
not. Oh my god!
But you just flick it. On. Just flick
it. Yeah, you
flick it off.
But flick it yourself without
and then tread on it.
No, yeah, no problem with doing that. Don't tread on it.
Might sting you.
The wasp?
We'll get your wife to...
yes, now's your time.
Parish notice board time.
Yes.
Mad how are our reviews
inevitably, five stars based on that chat. It was definitely five-star chat. Alexi YTW says, five stars, my favourite podcast. I look forward to listening to it on a Monday to get rid of those early week blues. So glad you're back and better than ever. My new favourite thing is Simon explaining the older references to young Holly, as this often helps me too. Hashtag emoji, smiley face. Hermione D says, five stars. Love the show.
A proper name and letters
Hermione
with no
D.
numbers.
Yeah, imagine that.
I love Hermione.
What a brilliant way to end a week. I always listen to this on a Friday, although I am unable to listen to this at work as I laugh too loudly. And RC1929, definitely a bot, says five stars. Hilarious podcast. The absolute best podcast out there. Have recommended to all my friends. And remember, if you want to get a shout out on the pod, then you need to leave us a review, but the only reviews we will read out on this podcast the ones that begin with five stars.
Now, I believe we've had a specific request for something in the tack cupboard, Susie.
Yes, we have. Leslie and Tiffers have been in touch, and you'll like this one. They say, "Dear Simon and crew, please, 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 can you get some new Drive Time car stickers? Oh. We have the old Drive Time car sticker from the other place, and it's stuck to the rear window of our car, which we're selling shortly to make way for a new shiny car that will not have a sticker. Please help. We know the old sticker will increase the value of our old car, and we're happy to let it go on the premise that we get a new Drive Time sticker for our new car. Here's hoping. Fantastic show, by the way. We never miss it. Six stars.
Six stars. I think that could be a new thing.
Yeah. Leslie and Tiffers.
Six stars could be a new thing.
How do we go about getting new car stickers? Who do we have to ask? Tack cupboard.
Someone in charge of the car stickers?
Yeah.
Who would we ask?
It's above my pay grade.
Could you get it sorted?
It's the marketing, I think.
I'll make some calls.
Marketing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll have a chat.
Yeah.
The only other person that I've seen with one of those car stickers from back in the day is my mother, and she doesn't drive anymore, so...
So she had your car sticker in the back of her car?
There was a car sticker advertising the old show.
Oh, right. Okay.
Do you not remember this?
Do you not remember it?
No. I don't remember your mother having a car sticker, no.
Well, I think we do need to get some car stickers made, and Susie and Holly between them. We'll get it sorted. And if you want to drop us an email saying how much you love us and maybe you want some tat, but what would be really good could you just ask for tat in general that we might have?
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than asking...
Making up new tat.
Yeah. Don't have to,
it might take me a while to get some car stickers.
You can email confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. If you've thought of some ideas for new tat, then Holly is the person. Mm-hmm. So use that email, but start it, Dear Holly, here's my idea for some tat.
Yep. I'll take any ideas.
Excellent. A couple of mentions now to Linda G, Catherine and Martin, who are amongst those who tweeted or blue-skied the secret phrase from last week's podcast, which was, of course, fiddling about with the pans for reasons I can't remember. Matt will have a new one for you a little bit later on. Is that right?
I will, yeah.
Now, to hear from the roll call of shame, those confessions that are just too gross, too seedy, or just too illegal for us to broadcast, first one comes from James. James, the story about your female spaniel dog on heat, getting a bit too close with a friend's male dog and you struggling to separate them, had way too many gory details for us to include on a tea time show. We don't approve that kind of thing. But you
it's
can't.
The circle of life, isn't it? I mean, it's how are you going to get baby spaniels? Yeah,
copulating dogs.
Yeah,
I don't think there's a lot of room for that kind of thing.
No, we don't.
On the show,
don't tend to advertise it. No.
And John, you went on a night out, had a kebab, threw up on your best friend's carpet at 3 o'clock in the morning, and then strategically placed your mate near said vomit to make it look as though he was the culprit.
That's not bad.
Actually, it's quite clever. But it's too much vomit. We can have a little bit of vomit, but not too much vomit. Because sick and wrong.
Sick and wrong.
Yeah, basically. Sick equals wrong.
Right,
yeah.
So let's get back to those that did make the cut. A lesson to all teenagers now with Laura's trick, do-wah-do-lang, oh telephone line, do-wah-do-lang, an ELO reference, but carry on.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone.
Today's confession comes from Laura. Simon, Matt, Holly, Susie, Katie, and all the lovely, forgiving people at Greatest Hits Radio Building.
Yes, everyone, all of us.
Everyone who's appeared on the show, past and present. Feel it is now time to unburden my soul of the mean and deceitful trick that I played on my daughter about 14 years ago. I say mean and deceitful, but actually it was just a lesson that many teenagers need to learn in paying attention to your parents and not just keeping your face glued to your phone.
Not a lot of remorse there, really.
No, yeah. A quick bit of background for you first. I hate this particular supermarket, which I have removed all reference
to. Oh, good, good.
Because it could be any of them.
Yeah.
I will do my utmost to avoid shopping there, and if I have to go there, then I will always drive the wrong way around the car park as my own personal little protest. Not a very sensible protest, but anyway. When our new local superstore was built, I tried it out, but I hated it so much. I wrote to the manager, and he invited me in for a cup of tea and a discussion. The cup of tea was fine, but he never offered me a chocolate biscuit, despite there being a plateful by his elbow on the desk. Anyway, I digress. My daughter was approximately 15 years old at this time, and had probably got her first mobile phone. It was the school holidays, and she and I were going into our local town to get dog food, and more pertinently to this confession, petrol. For whatever reason, I was going to get fuel from the supermarket petrol station adjacent to the store. My usual garage was probably taking a delivery or some such and was closed. We arrived at the garage forecourt to find it heaving with queuing traffic, and the payment kiosk, which also doubles as a mini version of the main shop, was full of people queuing to pay for petrol and baskets full of shopping. For goodness sake, go to the main store if you need food. Stop thinking you can do a full week's family shop whilst filling up with unleaded.
Oh, dear.
So we sat and waited about 5 minutes before we were able to pull up next to a pump. All this time, my daughter had been glued to her phone, oblivious to her surroundings. Our conversation had been something like this. Me. My, it's busy. Daughter. Silence, apart from tap, tap, tap on the phone. Me. I need fuel, so we'll just have to stick with it and wait. Daughter. Silence, except for tap, tap, tap on the phone. So engrossed was my daughter that she had no idea what was going on at all. Now, at that time, they'd recently introduced a system where you could insert your credit card at the pump, fill up with fuel and be charged accordingly, all without having to go near the payment kiosk. What with all the queues of shoppers buying their family weekly shop inside, and the length of time I'd already waited, I took this payment option. I inserted my credit card tapped in the PIN, filled up with fuel, and then when asked if I wanted the optional receipt, I pressed yes and took the paper receipt that the pump spat out at me. I then got back into the car and said to my still oblivious daughter, "This is ridiculous. I'm not waiting in that queue to pay. That supermarket has quite enough of everybody's money without having some of mine. I'm out of here." Started the engine, began to manoeuvre around the other cars to exit the petrol station. At this point, my daughter now started to take notice. "You can't do that! You haven't paid!" she exclaimed, amazed she knew. "Whatever," I said, "whatever." "But that's theft," she said, shocked. "Look," I said, "I hate this supermarket, and they won't miss a few quid with all of this goes into their tills. It'll serve them right." By this point, we were clear of the forecourt and heading into the main road. "I can't believe you're doing this. It's dishonest," scolded my daughter. "What if the police come round?" And then my favourite bit, "If I turn to a life of crime, it'll be your fault." By now, she is frantically texting my husband at work. "Mum has stolen fuel from the supermarket. She says she won't pay and she's driven off." We drove across town with an increasingly mortified daughter remonstrating on how wrong this was and how she never expected any criminal behaviour from her mother. Her dad's replies to her texts were fairly low-key. I think he suspected something was afoot, but my daughter was completely in shock at my appalling deed. 5 or 10 minutes later, after leaving the supermarket, and with my daughter still berating me, we pulled into the car park of a pet food store. And as soon as I'd parked and turned off the engine, I pulled the fully paid up fuel receipt from my pocket and flourished it in front of my daughter. I'm not sure that she was more relieved that I wasn't a criminal or furious that I'd wound her up like that. But let's face it, if she hadn't been glued to her phone and paid attention at the petrol station, all this wouldn't have happened. Now, whilst my daughter has never forgiven me for this incident, I'm sure that the Drive Time Collective can find it in their hearts to forgive. It may have stressed my daughter temporarily, but surely this is a lesson to all teenagers to get off their phones and to engage in the real world around them, and in particular, to take notice of their parents. This is the moral of today's tale. I leave this delicate matter in your wise and judicious hands. Laura, thank you very much indeed. Shocking confession. Winding up your daughter, something splendid. Sister Susie says this.
I think, yeah, who didn't do that at the time when it first came in that you had to pay for petrol at a pump? You know, I always remember driving off thinking, oh, it feels a bit naughty, even though I've actually paid for it and done all the right things. Not actually going into the petrol station was quite exciting, and whether my life was quite boring. Maybe that's the answer to that. But I think teaching a teenager a lesson is probably a good thing, but I don't know if I am going to forgive, because I think you're just quite mean to the supermarket, and I'm not sure the supermarket deserved it, so...
Oh, well, I don't know.
Really?
Brother Matthew.
Yes, this feels like the second confession on the trot, where we've been basically making fun of monosyllabic teenagers, and I am all in favour of that, I've got to say. Oh, do try and engage us in conversation with something more than... So I'm definitely going to forgive, because, you know, if the teenager actually, you know, replied when we were talking to them, then maybe this wouldn't be happening, kids. So for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
Also, the small matter of the supermarket manager, who at least tried to talk her out of it.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? He didn't give her the biscuits. She was unhappy that she wasn't offered biscuits, but, you know.
Maybe he was concerned that it'd be an unhealthy contribution to her diet.
That's true. It's quite presumptive, though. I think I would offer the biscuits. A bit weird to go into a meeting with someone and they've got biscuits and they don't offer you the biscuits.
Why didn't she just take one?
Because there are other people. You don't just walk into a room and take other people's biscuits.
You're talking about a woman who would quite happily drive around the car park the wrong way.
Well, yeah, no, that is true.
If you're prepared to do that, you can at least help yourself to
help
a biscuit.
Help yourself to a biscuit. Goodness me.
Anyway, still to come on this podcast, a shocking podcast exclusive confession that will make your jaw drop, I think, and maybe briefly stop your heart, although it will start again, so it'll be fine. And
it will start again, just to confirm.
Yes.
Okay.
And we're joining the Regatta River rivalry with Steve's tale, but not before Billy's confession. Love lifts us up where we belong.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Today's confession comes from Billy. Thank you, Billy. Father Simon, the Right Reverend Matt, Sister Holly, Sister Susie, and the Holy Collective. I have a tale to tell, which I'm sure is not uncommon for anyone who looks back on their teenage years, but it is a confession I've been holding on to for nearly 40 years. When I was just 16, now I'm a 55-year-old man and minister of religion. I feel now is the time I should make my confession. I mean, you could always hear your own confession, I suppose. But I throw myself at your mercy. Let me take you back to 1980-something and to a town in Essex and to my after-school and weekend job at a well-known supermarket. It might be the same as the well-known supermarket we were talking about just
will
the
it?
Other day.
Yeah. Okay.
I was an overconfident 18-year-old entering into the world of work, trying to earn enough money to buy some clothes, get an ear stud to impress the girls, and buy copious amounts of pie and chips on a Saturday night after church youth club. Because nothing impresses the girls more than pie and chips.
Yeah, pie and chips.
My role at the supermarket was stacking shelves with some till work. But mainly I was on cat food, where I was excellent with a pricing gun, practicing my James Bond impression as I stuck the labels on Kit Kat and Whiskers. I could fill a tray of cat food, tins with stickers, in less than 20 seconds. Speedy. I wasn't always on cat food, but dog food too. Sometimes on toilet rolls. But I had a habit of lobbing them over into the next aisle to try and hit my mate who was on jams and marmalades. Until one day I hit an old lady on the head with a packet of 12 Andrex.
Okay.
I was reprimanded and demoted back to cat food. This wasn't the first time I'd been told off, Father Simon, as I was nearly fired for racing my mate along the aisles on the pallet trolleys. And that was not allowed while customers were in the store. And there was the time that I snuck upstairs, ate some biscuits from the warehouse, and then accessed the store tannoy system and announced to the store and my mates that night store manager Elliot had to phone home in my best ET voice. Yeah. I'm expecting a good ET phone voice impression there, Simon.
Well, no, it was just outstanding, yes.
Thank you.
It was the 80s.
Elliot did, in fact, sack me on the spot.
Oh, right.
But I convinced him that my stepdad would beat me up if I went home and told him, so Elliot relented and gave me one last warning.
Okay, that's fine.
This is like a soap opera.
It is.
That's what
it
this is. With all these small misdemeanors behind me, after all, I meant no harm, I continued keeping my nose clean and was a good Saturday and odd evening shell stacker. However, one Friday night, me and the lads went out on the town. We managed to get into a number of nightclubs. Later, I stumbled home via the kebab shop to spend my supermarket earnings on a large mixed doner with extra chili sauce from Croc's Kebab Shop, which had the catchy tagline...
Go on.
You'll run like a horse with Croc's chili sauce. I went to bed knowing that I was due in the early-ish hours for my Saturday shift helping the warehouse and going on the till. I got up, showered and went to work feeling okay, but this feeling would not last for long. And it was then that my Friday night out and my large mixed doner with extra hot chili sauce, you run like a horse, began to kick in. I had an almighty hangover and let's say a poorly tummy, and I had to run like a horse. And here I come to the crux of my confession. In the warehouse, there was a large pallet of something that needed moving from one place to another, and there before me was the forklift. Well, how hard can it be? I'd seen Elliot phone home use it many times, and it looked kind of fun. What could possibly go wrong? Well, Father Simon, whether it be my lack of training in forklift driving or the hangover from Friday night, I do not know. But I managed to miss the pallet filled with something and drive headlong into the double fridge freezer in the warehouse. I pierced both doors properly, at least a foot inside. I panicked, turned off the forklift and ran. I headed for what I thought would be the best hiding place, and it was here that Croc's chili sauce that makes you run like a horse became a reality.
Oh, no.
And so therefore I wish to seek forgiveness for a number of things. To the old lady I hit with a 12-pack of Andrex. To Elliot, for embarrassing him on the tannoy and asking him to phone home. To the manager of the store for piercing his large double-door fridge freezer. And to any of the staff who likely got the blame for doing this after all, who would be so stupid as to think that they could drive a forklift with no training. And lastly, to the cleaner. I throw myself at the beloved's mercy, feeling relieved once again to unbridle myself. I learned my lesson and I do not drink too much now, being a minister of religion. Crocs has closed down, you might be interested to learn.
Not surprising.
I pass by that store on a regular basis and feel it's time to seek forgiveness. Well, thank heavens, Crocs has closed down.
Yeah.
It's good. If anyone wants to use that, I don't see why anyone else can't use that. You'll run like a horse with our extra special chili sauce. Sister Susie, what do you say to Billy?
No. All of those things really, really bad, particularly the forklift driving. Danger.
Danger.
Exactly. It could have been worse. It's just not clever. It's not big. It's just a good job you're a minister of religion so you can ask for actual forgiveness from the man upstairs. I just can't forgive you.
You can do good works, Billy. I think that's what you need to do. Yeah. I think Brother Matthew might be okay.
It's good, yes. Yeah. So Billy has found his calling because it clearly wasn't in the supermarket industry, really, was it? No. And you've got to admire the brass neck of Crocs to basically advertise their chili sauce is not going to be very good for you in the long run. After.
That's
very
true.
Oh, my goodness. There go your bowels. So for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
So here we go with today's confession. Matt has been telling us all about the kayaking.
Yes.
And the rowing.
Uh-huh.
And the medals. Today's confession picks up on that theme. It comes from Let's Call Him Steve. Father Simon, Matthew and Holly and Susie and Katie. Back during the 80s, while all our friends were into rugby and football, the less coordinated teenagers at our school had the opportunity to take up sprint kayaking under the watchful eye of our then PE teacher, who was also the Olympic kayaking coach at the time.
Wow.
His daughter and then boyfriend were part of the Olympic team destined to race at the Seoul Olympics, no less, and they were very much the pin-up couple of the canoeing world at that time. We trained regularly on a popular section of the River Thames, and so we naturally had to share the water space with rowers, pleasure cruisers, and, from our perspective, other annoying river obstacles. Okay. Kayaking club was on the opposite bank to the rowing club, so despite coping well with all the other river users, there was a rivalry between ourselves and the rowers. Us canoeists and kayakers are, of course, forward-facing, whilst rowers are backward-facing, and so we considered ourselves far superior, particularly when they couldn't often see where they were going.
Yeah.
And we would be forced out of the way at risk of a high-speed collision. Understandably, the odd accidental collision would occur, which failed to help the relationship between the two sports even more. Isn't that typical of the way of the world, that if kayakers and rowers can't get on, why can't we all get on with each other? I think that's the message of today's confession.
Yes.
Right, okay.
We are the world. Mm. One weekend during the summer of 1988, the year of the Seoul Olympics, our kayaking club decided to have a summer barbecue, which coincidentally was the same weekend of the local rowing regatta. As we prepared our barbecue party, the rowers spent most of the Saturday tediously arranging lines of buoys along the river to precisely mark out the course for their regatta on the following day. From experience, this is not an easy job, particularly when the river is full of boaters quaffing champagne and just generally getting in the way. Of course, us canoeists wouldn't do such a thing. After many hours of what appeared to be quite entertaining hard work, the rowers had their regatta ready, with many buoys marking several perfectly straight lines along the river. This formed a racing course and a lesser significant lane for the other river users to keep them safe from the high-speed rowing boats going backwards. That evening on the opposite bank, we started to enjoy our barbecue with many a beverage on offer. For us teenagers and trained athletes, we probably went nowhere near these beverages, and as I recall, the drinks were perhaps by no means responsible for our actions that evening. I don't think that's a disclaimer, really.
Okay.
As darkness fell, we noticed an old rescue dinghy that had been tied up at the water's edge. Naturally, as regular river users, we were curious to know how the party looked from the viewpoint of the middle of the river. While we precariously made our way into the dark waters, we came across an unexpected buoy, B-U-O-Y, obviously, and then we remembered that the rowers had left their marker buoys along the river. Not wanting any other nocturnal river user to get hindered by these obstacles, we decided to helpfully move them out of the way. Although, while some moved relatively easily, others were wet and slippery and got moved slightly less out of the way. Nevertheless, we enthusiastically got to work tidying up the river like the good, responsible river enthusiasts we were. As morning dawned, it became clearly apparent that our attempts at helpfully tidying up the river had ultimately resulted in many of the boys being relocated to form a more, well, more of a swerving slalom course than a perfectly straight and carefully aligned rowing course. Mm. Although we were very satisfied with our efforts, the rowers and other river users appeared to be much less impressed. And looking back on the events of that weekend, I feel I should perhaps be asking forgiveness, not for our inadequate boating skills during the darkness, nor do I ask forgiveness from the rowers for the disruption caused to their event. After all, they usually couldn't see where they were going anyway, for the best of days.
Yeah.
I do, however, come to seek forgiveness for the unusual abuse, exaggerated hand signals and verbal complaints directed at our verbal athletes during their very important Sunday morning training session. Abuse came from the grumpy rowers and secondly from the confused river users that blocked the waterways and had no idea which side of the river to use as unguided rowers headed towards them at high speed, causing absolute chaos and interrupting their very important champagne quaffing.
Mm-hmm.
How interesting to get a little insight into an entirely different world and the bitter rivalry between the kayakers and the rowers, the forward faces and the rear faces. I never knew that this rivalry existed. But anyway, they turned perfectly straight course into a swerving slalom, which messed up the whole regatta. Sister Susie.
Well, Steve, I kind of like what you've done here. However, I just think that regardless of whether you didn't like the rowers or the kayakers or whatever, it's a bit dangerous, wasn't it? Wasn't it moving all of those things? If you said it was a swerving slalom, then that sounds like that could cause some injuries. And
well, face
for
the
that
front
reason,
then.
Yeah.
That's all they
look
have to
look where you're
do.
Going.
Not forgiving.
Okay, Brother Matthew.
Yes, I'm going to forgive because, as we've said, you know, the rowers should be looking where they're going, shouldn't they? Or should have one of those, wee man at the back of the boat, the cox.
There
he goes. Should have been him doing his thing. Go a bit left, he should have been saying. So with the Seoul Olympics, that was Steve Redgrave getting gold, if memory serves, in the rowing.
There you go. All the sporting
knowledge is incredible. It's all there. They should have been checking on the boys, shouldn't they, before they'd gone out rowing. So it was their own fault, and for that reason,
yes,
I'm going to forgive.
I mean, there are rivalries everywhere you look. You know, Norwich fans won't talk to Ipswich fans.
Mm.
It's quite difficult to say Ipswich when half your jaw isn't working.
Oh, right, yes, yeah. Let's hope it doesn't come up.
Just completely numb. Anyway, at least I can speak coherently. Well, as much as this thing is ever happening. Okay, so let's do something that we haven't done before, which is I'm going to read out a confession which hasn't featured on the show, and it hasn't featured on the show. I mean, I think you will get it as soon as I read it out. It just didn't feel appropriate to read out because it's not really a confession, but that's how it's been sent in, and it's been sent in. The email is from Dawn in Scotland. That's how she has signed it. Simon, Matt and the team, my confession is quite a sad one, so I hope I don't upset anyone. It goes back to the 1970s. I am one half of a twin, and along with our two older brothers, were brought up in a very loving and happy home. My twin and I always had great fun dressing up the same and doing normal identical twin stuff, like pretending to be each other. And we were very close, and that really continued until we hit our mid-teens. Now, I want to point out at this time, although we dressed identically, my sister had one item of clothing different from mine, and that is a red jumper. That was because I hated the colour red. You need to remember this jumper because it's relevant to the end of the story. When we were 15, our wonderful dad passed away, and my sister seemed to change at that time. Rather than the family becoming closer, she started staying out late, mixing with the wrong people, and generally rebelling against what was right and what was wrong. In the early hours of one morning, something woke me up, and when I looked at my twin's bed, I noticed it was empty. I searched the house as quietly as possible. There was no sign of her. Unsure what to do, I went back to our bedroom, and that was when I noticed a letter sitting on the bedside cabinet. She said she couldn't bear to be with the family any longer, felt tied down, trapped, and was going to be with her new so-called friends. So I woke Mum, and she was broken-hearted reading the letter. For myself, I felt like I had lost my right arm. For the next 5 years, the family tried to remain upbeat. My brothers got married and were happy, but for my mum, she never really recovered from losing my sister. Sometimes I would be in pain, which is quite normal for one half of a twin, if the other one hurt themselves. Throughout the 5 years, I tried desperately to find her through various friends, and then one day got a breakthrough. My auntie Janet remembered my sister bringing a so-called friend to her house, begging for some money as they were going to London. They didn't know where, but Auntie gave them a contact who might help. She thought no more about it at the time, nor told any of us, because she had fallen out with my mum. After a lot of hard work, I tracked this so-called contact who said that they had lived in the basement for a year and then moved on after getting into trouble with the police. I got a contact phone number for my sister and tried calling. It went to voicemail. I left a message begging her to contact us, but she didn't. However, I wasn't prepared to give up, and for almost 8 months, I constantly dialed the number. So now we come to the saddest part in all of this. My darling mum developed cancer and was given 6 months. I knew her deepest wish was to see Alice one more time, and I promised her that I would find her and bring her home. I left so many messages on her mobile until one day I got a call from an unknown number. Answering it on the other end was my sister. We talked and cried, and she explained why she had left home and broken up the family. At that time, all I cared about was getting her to come home to see mum before it was too late. But being her usual stubborn self, all she would say was, "Oh, I'm sure there's plenty of time." For a whole 2 weeks, I begged her to please come back, even just for one day, and she said she would. She never had any intention, though. And sadly, she was too involved with the wrong people. My mum was now confined to bed, and the doctor had said she only had a few more days. On what would be her last day, she pleaded with me again to bring Alice home so that she could see her just one last time. I tried calling my sister, but she just kept saying she would come home one day. And now I come to my confession. I knew that despite the amount of times I pleaded with my twin to come back, that she wouldn't do it. So I did something in the hope that it would ease my mum's grief. I went to the bedroom that I had shared with my sister and I put on her red jumper. I then went into my mum's bedroom. I didn't say anything as she opened her eyes, and I can still remember her exact words. "Oh, my darling Alice, you have come home." She didn't have much strength to sit up, but somehow she managed it and hugged me tight. There were no accusations or recriminations. We just talked mother to daughter. Thankfully, if that's the right word, mum was getting tired, so I told her I would let her sleep and go and get something to eat with my sister. She made me promise not to go away again and to come home, and I said that I would. I quickly changed back out of the red jumper and let mum sleep. When I checked on her about 2 hours later, she was wide awake and I can still see that happy look on her face. She was asking where Alice was, so I had to lie and say she was having a sleep and would be back upstairs shortly. For the next 3 hours, I had to keep making excuses and changing clothes, but it was worth it all just to make my mum's final hour so happy. She passed peacefully, surrounded by her children, and while it broke my heart, I had no regrets about what I had done just to make her happy one last time. And Dawn signs off by saying, "I hope I can be forgiven for what I did, but honestly, I'd do it all again if I had to." Now, obviously, Dawn, first of all, thank you very much indeed for sharing that extraordinary story. It's not really a you've written it as a confession, which, and I've got the music playing and we've included it in the podcast for obvious reason, but what an astonishing story. I mean,
it's wow.
What can you say?
You're right, it's not really the kind of story we would normally do on confessions, but it's what a great story. Goodness me.
It's the kind of story that Simon Bates would used to have done when he did Our Tune, when he would
write an extraordinary
story. But that ending, I think you did exactly the right thing.
Absolutely.
I think she did do the right thing. I think and how strong she was to do that at that time as well, just to make her mum really happy. Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah.
So, I forgive her.
Anyway, Dawn, thank you very much for getting in touch. And the advantage of having this podcast is that I think that story, we just wouldn't have been able to use.
No, exactly. In days gone by, we wouldn't have. No one would have heard that at all, which would have been a shame.
So, Dawn, thank you very much indeed for getting in touch. And I hope, I don't know, presumably you wrote, why did you write that email? So that we would, maybe it's closure? I don't know. Is that a stupid thing to say?
No.
But anyway, We appreciate you writing,
yeah,
Dawn.
Yeah.
Thank you very much indeed. Confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. If you want, maybe you have a reaction to what Dawn has said, in which case that's the email to get in touch with. Thank you very much indeed for listening. There'll be a slightly more conventional. So we didn't do anything from the crypt today, so there's no confession from the crypt. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a special bunch of oldies for our next podcast, because we're all on holiday.
Of course we are, yeah.
We are actually all going on holiday together. Susie's got a caravan.
Yes.
And we're all going to Lowestoft, and we're all going to sleep in the same caravan and play crazy golf.
Crazy golf for 2 weeks,
and
everyone.
Holly is going to have the time of her life.
Yeah.
And she will say every day, I can't believe I'm so fortunate to have fallen into this.
So blessed.
Anyway, thank you very much, Steve, for listening. There is a secret code phrase if you've listened this far. And you get in touch, obviously, on Twitter, at Simon Mayo. Threads, Mr. Simon Mayo, Blue Sky Simon Mayo, and here we go.
And the secret code phrase this week is not too much vomit. Not too much vomit.
Thank you. That'll be a good one.
What's coming up on your threat?
Finally, don't forget to follow, like, and subscribe, and telling everybody, knock on their door and say, hey, Simon Mayo's Confessions podcast is back. We're all on holiday now together in that caravan. But there will be a crypt special coming up next week. From the pub, Sister Susie.
Au revoir.
From the tack cupboard, Sister Holly.
Bon voyage.
And from the gutter, Brother Matthew.
Yes, goodbye.
Thank you very much indeed for listening. We'll see you very soon.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. Want to confess? Simon Mayo would love to hear your story. He may even keep it to himself.
He definitely won't keep it to himself.
Send gory details, please, to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk.
I've just got that. Very good.
Just got what?
Why the
What's
title?
The joke?
Yeah. I've just understood it now. Don't need to go into it, everyone.
It's
Let's move on. Move on. No. Move on.